this is Beyond the Barracks, a podcast about the many and varied journeys of Australia's ex-service men, women and their families, brought to you by RSL Victoria.
In each episode, we'll interview a guest, sometimes two, about their life in service and life after service, exploring the many highlights and challenges that they may have faced along the way.
Beyond the Barracks is a podcast for veterans and their families to tell their stories. Sometimes we may discuss experiences and issues that some listeners may find distressing. Please check the show notes for support services.
We acknowledge that this podcast is being recorded on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri Woi Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation and pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging. RSL Victoria and the Beyond the Barracks team recognises the service of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples, just as we recognise the service of all Australians. We are proud of the contribution they have made and continue to make to the Australian Defence Force. Well, Ailes, I bet you never thought in a million years we'd be interviewing Anthony Field from the Wiggles on Beyond the Barracks, and that's who's on today.
I cannot wait because the only bit that I know, I've met Anthony briefly previously at a Rock for R&R event.
That's right.
And it was there that I discovered he actually has an army history.
That's right. Not many people do, and they're pleasantly surprised, I would say. And I'm pretty sure it's had a significant impact on his life, and that's what I'm looking forward to hearing about.
Yeah,
today.
I think even though, you know, he's been in the spotlight, he's been in the media, perhaps this is a part of him that we don't have terribly much detail about. So I'm here to get the goss today.
Absolutely. And I'll find out more about my two connections with him, which is one, we're both infantry soldiers or backgrounds, and we both play in pretty well-known bands as well. You know, the Wiggles,
yeah,
and Nixter.
Yeah, speak yourself up, Harry.
Yeah, can't wait.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Great to be here, Aileen.
Probably also very well known as the Blue Wiggle, but we will get to that in due course. Maybe take us back, Anthony, if you don't mind, to your early family years. Tell us a little bit about your family. I think you're one of seven.
That's right. Yeah, my hat goes off to my mum. She had seven kids under six.
Wow.
Pre-disposable nappies.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how she did it. Dad was a pharmacist, mm-hmm. and it was the days when pharmacists, there was no supermarkets selling any product that was pharmacy. So Dad, like headache tablets, all were at the chemist. You couldn't get them at the supermarket. So he was working and working. So I didn't see too much of Dad. He worked 10 till 10 at night. And I just saw him occasionally on the weekend. But I grew up in the western suburbs out in Sydney, Laidlaw Park. It was great. But I don't know. We had a mini, and we had seven kids, no seatbelts. And Dad had an old Holden. And, you know, they used to have the holders, the long neck holders for the beers.
For the beers.
And he used to smoke and have the beer in the long neck holder, in the Holden. It was different times, man.
And you went to school out west, and is that where you lived until you left home? And you grew
no,
up
I went to school out west. I went to Laidlaw Park Primary School. Then I went to Blacktown, which is St. Pat's Blacktown. But then I went to boarding school, Hunters Hill Joey, St. Joseph's College, which is a real rugby school.
Yeah.
But it was the old school ways where you saw your parents once a month. It was pretty hardcore.
Yeah.
It was, which, I mean, we're going to talk about the army later, but the difference, it's kind of like I needed to join the army. But what I found the difference was, and at that time, it hadn't been sorted out, how the brothers and all that behaved to the kids.
Yeah.
There was a lot of things that were really not great. But when I joined the army, I was so refreshed. Felt, you know, the sergeants, the officers, the NCO, all the guys, they were hard, but they were fair.
Yeah,
and that was my real that's when I really loved it. Because guys in the army said, oh, that must mean half you. And I said, mate, it was a breeze compared to boarding school.
Boarding school, yeah.
Yeah.
And your brothers and sisters, well, went to boarding school? Or?
My brothers did, not my sisters.
Right.
My brothers were all the same. And some of them had a good time, and my brother Patrick didn't have a great time. So two of us had a great time, two of us didn't.
The military, how did that pop into your head? Is there a background in the family, or was it inspiration?
There really wasn't. I say in interviews that it was Elvis GI Blues, but I did actually, because I'm an Elvis nut, and I did say, God, that looks like fun, man.
Yeah.
I mean, not realizing I did go to Germany, got your GI Blues, so I did. But it's not Hollywood, that's right. The first day I was, when you're going down that bus to Kapooka.
Yeah.
They're calling you every name under the sun. And I'm going, this is not GI Blues.
That wasn't what was on the movie.
Bit of a reality check.
So what age is this, Anthony?
I was 18.
You were 18.
Yeah. And in those days you could sign for three or six.
What year, sorry?
1982.
Right, okay. Yeah, it's only 4 years before me. Yeah.
Yeah, wow,
yeah,
mate.
Yeah, you, yeah, yeah.
I'm going to say you look a lot younger than I do.
You're a top bloke.
No, I mean that. I thought you were going okay.
I'll tell you. Yeah. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, I signed up for three. And fast forwarding, but I actually would have stayed in. But I learnt the bagpipe. I was in the infantry. And I learnt the bagpipes. And in those days, you do all the funerals. You do the flag going up, and all that stuff.
Ceremonies.
Yeah. We actually even... This is like going back, but a couple of guys got caught stealing from other diggers, and they got drummed out of the regiment, and we actually drummed them out.
Is that right?
Drummed them out of the regiment.
Yeah, what a walk of shame. I can't imagine that.
Yeah, yeah. It was.
For those who don't know, being drummed out is where essentially you arrange the whole organisation. So in a battalion, 300-odd people or might be less than that, and they're arranged on a drill square.
That's
right. And the people who have brought shame to the unit are marched off and drummed out of the unit. And
The pipes and drums.
Yeah.
How embarrassing. Drum. Yeah.
But I'd always heard that expression. Yeah. And when I got to 5-7 – I was part of it.
Yeah.
So I saw that. I didn't know how I got to that. That was one of
So just going back to what did you expect going to Kapooka? You join up and you're off to Kapooka. What were your expectations? What was your experience at Kapooka? You've already mentioned it was a bit of a kind of dial down from boarding school. But so talk us through the experience.
Yeah. Well, look, the great thing about 1982 was that there was no internet. I had no idea what it was going to be like, and I liked that. But the sergeant, I'm sure they do it to every. I don't know if this happened to you, Harry, but he said when we got in there, he said at night time we went fill out the menus, and put it under my door, for the breakfast.
Yep.
As though it was like a hotel.
It was great. And then at 5 o'clock in the morning, every swear word you've ever heard in the morning, this is not.
Yeah, this is not
holiday. You're not on Bondi Beach smoking drugs. and then getting the hair cut, do you want to keep some of your hair? They've cracked these jokes everywhere.
They do, because you're doing hundreds and hundreds a week,
Yeah, and I said, I'd like to keep some of it. He said, well, put your hand out.
That's right.
Well, I actually really liked it. It was fantastic.
Yeah, there's an Italian fellow who said, how would you like your hair done? And I kind of was, I know you've got to cut it off, but I wouldn't mind. And he said, no worries.
Good. And I remember the terrifying, there was women in the mess. And before we went in for our first meal, they went, if you even look at them. It was like.
Wow.
And I remember we were so busy and so tired. No one spoke because you only had 15 minutes to eat your
That's
meal.
Right. Get it in
and
here.
No one spoke.
In and out. Yeah. Anthony, it sounds like you came a little bit from a time in your life before the army, a little bit off the beaten track perhaps, unfocused, et cetera. Yeah. How quickly did the army start to instill some – I don't know, some characteristic changes in you, like you back on track?
Well, I actually needed to be brought into line, you know, and I needed to be, you know, they say they bring you down and then they build you up, and I think I needed that. So and there were guys in I'm pretty sure it's the same. What I love about the army was you'd have a couple of guys who'd been in Long Bay Jail, you know, and then you'd have
all walks of life.
And you're all doing the same thing, and
you're all equal.
You know, I came from a private school, and how I was, you know, so
badly fitting. Everyone's in badly fitting greens and hair, and it does really break you down. Not break you down as in you know, broken, but just breaks everything back to basics. And
start from scratch.
Yeah, and also the insistence from the officers and the NCOs that, you know, if you take something, you share it. You know, all that. All that team stuff, I loved it. I thought, this is a good philosophy, you know. And again, I needed it. I was 18 years old, totally lost. So, you know, even to this day, I put everything I've in my left hand so I can salute. Not that I see anyone to salute. But I don't. Do you do that, Harry?
I carry so many artifacts, if you like, you know, physical, language, et cetera, of course. And I still stay in contact with those groups from, you know, even Kampuka. We've kind of all kind of found each other. A couple of guys have found each other, but those initial stages of any kind of journey in a unit or whatever, it just blistered into you, you know, they're burnt into you. I think
is for life.
And so you go through Kampuka. It sounds like you had a positive experience there, and it was life changing. So how did you find out your first posting, and how did you go through?
Yeah, I remember we were out bush, and the postings came through.
Right,
where you going? Oh well, no, that was in Singleton. The postings came through. No, firstly, you know that I think they did aptitude.
They did,
So and you just got sent to the infantry centre. That's where I went.
Yeah.
Which I was fine.
The School of Cool in Singleton.
It was great, mate. Yeah. So that's where I found out. I thought I was going to go up to Townsville or somewhere, but I got Holsworthy, which was great.
Yeah. What unit was that? The
5-7.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was the mechanised.
That's right. Battalion. Yeah. The buckets.
Yeah. The buckets.
And once you enjoyed Singleton. I mean, that's where you learn your craft as an infantry soldier.
I did, and it's funny, people take different. I used to love, you'd be out in the middle of nowhere, you thought wasn't the middle of nowhere, and the Salvation Army guy had come along.
The Sally man,
with his the brew, you know, with the tea and biscuits and all that. And I was a naive kid. I went up and said to the guy, I was so impressed with these guys just turning up, you know, for no other reason except to help people. And I said, oh, you know, I'd really like to become, can I do that? And he said, it's a religion. I mean, I didn't know that. No. I was so naive. I didn't even know it was religion. But, boy, they're probably still doing it, aren't they,
are,
Harry?
They are, definitely. And I think the I'm not religious myself, but there is a great place for the Padres and the Sally Man, those types of things, and the bringers of morale, tea and biscuits, ales.
What
they
a
were,
boost.
They were.
Yeah. Yeah.
At what point then in your service did you deploy overseas?
Yeah, that was in 1984.
Okay.
And I was a piper in the army, at 5-7, as well as an infantryman, and drove the armoured personnel carrier. So we were traditionally, if you're in the pipes and drums, you're the ambulance or the stretcher bearers, and that's what we were. But the boys were going over to, I think it was B Company or D Company, were going over to commemorate four Aussies, the remains of these four Aussies from the Second World War in Arnhem. They were buried there, and the pipe major picked our best piper to go, but at the last minute, Private McDaniel couldn't go, and so they asked me to do it. So I went, I'll be there for sure, and I went to Germany, and we trained with the NATO forces before the wall had come down, and what was incredible was, this is in 1984, they were pulling like what looked like laptops out and sending, guided missiles.
Mm. Right.
And I asked our sergeant, I said, have we got those in Australia? And he said, we do. We fire one a year. Yeah. And he wasn't joking.
No.
And then they had the Leopard 4 or something. Our armored personnel carriers, you know, you had to do a big circle to turn around. These things were turning on their tracks.
On the top, yeah.
We were like
miles behind. Yeah.
Miles and miles behind. Yeah, we had all the Vietnam stuff at that time. So, but it was, and we did a exercise where it was the closest thing to war I ever got, which was because it was night to day, like what the, because it was the Cold War was on, war was still.
Yeah, yeah.
We were driving through on the armored personnel carriers with the Green Howards. We'd drive through fences and properties and they'd just mark it down like people's properties.
Yeah.
It was wild. But, so it was a bit of a
– great experience.
It really was.
Was that all pretty surreal for you? Had you been overseas at all in your life?
I'd never been overseas and it was great. We went in a I'm not good with aeroplanes, but it was one with propellers and we were facing backwards. All the way over to, and I loved it because the sergeant came along as our flight attendant, you know, and throw sandwiches at you. There's your lunch.
Yeah, it wasn't first class. Yeah. No.
And I had a we were out bush in Germany. I had a birthday, and this was so army. Our corporal came up to me and said, Private Effenfield, I heard it's your birthday. That was it.
That's it.
That's your happy birthday.
Yes, Coral.
Yeah. They didn't. They'd use that for truth. So I had one birthday I spent. I had a remember bunghole?
You get the bunghole
and stick a candle in it, light it, and sing happy birthday to myself while the rest of the platoon did push-ups around me.
Same experience, Anthony.
It's not that year, but I remember. Yeah.
You could have a lot of fun, and it was all taken in the right spirit. And as long as no one got singled out and got too harshly treated, I think it was all good character building stuff. And you mentioned before that the NCOs and the corporals that are forming who you are at that stage, as an 18-year-old, I joined at the same time. There was always an element of humour in the background of it. You know, they're just almost serious, but always fair. I found, which was great.
Yeah,
you that's a formative period to go overseas, deployed on behalf of the nation to represent the nation overseas. You come back to Australia. What year are we talking about? 84, 80, 85.
85.
Yeah.
But you're right. You know what you're saying there, Harry? You're right. People say they represent Australia in the sporting field, but people in the army and the services, they're representing Australia. They're kind of getting a jersey themselves. I really feel – really, and when we were overseas, we were proud to be Aussies, you know, like it was good. Yeah.
So you come back from that and you're heading, you come back to Holsworthy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then what happens from there? And
I was going to stay in. I was really loving it. It was 1985. And then I heard that the police have a pipe ban in New South Wales. And I thought, I always wanted to be a policeman.
Yeah.
So I contacted the pipe major there and I was going to get out and go straight into the police force. They had a change of government. The Labor government came in and they basically took the funding out of the pipes and drums.
Right.
Just as I left. And I went, that was it, I'm out, you know. Yeah. And I remember getting, you know, they give you a plaque. Your platoon gives you a plaque. Sergeant Royston, who I'm still buddies with, he wrote on, I've still got it on the back. And they used to call me Tony, right? There's nothing out there, Tony. I loved it. It was brilliant.
So did you actually discharge officially from the army at that stage to move into the police force?
Yeah, I did about 3 years. No, it was only 3 years you had to do. And I did it and I would have been happy to stay.
Yeah.
But yeah, and they offered, you know, they offer you a stripe.
Yep.
To stay
the Lance Jack. Yeah. But I was the same. 3 years, I probably would have left if I went off to Perth, and if that hadn't worked out, I would have moved on, I think. And how was the so you made the decision? The police isn't an option anymore. What happens from there? You're in transition now, and you probably don't even realise it at 21 mm-hmm. years old, leaving formative.
That's it. I had a couple of I played in the Cockroaches, my brother's band, so playing music. And I had one of those cultural moments where I'd just come out of the infantry and a guy came on stage. This is at Lane Cove Town Hall. And they had a sound meter and he kept pulling our amps out. And I was straight out of
infantry,
And I grabbed the guy and I said, "Come on, mate, outside." He was around the I should call it him. And that was really straight out of there wasn't much diplomacy.
That was pretty reactive.
But I got banned for life from Lane Cove Town Hall.
Is that right?
I don't know if they still know that, but isn't that terrible?
Yeah.
But
do you look back now as that being a wrinkle through the transition process, readjustment?
Right. Yeah. Or even playing touch football, if someone was coming to me, I'd punch them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You do.
I really had to have a change of
thinking and
heart. In the end, you're training with weapons and you're doing all that sort of stuff. So,
and it's very physical and very
macho.
Very macho in those days. Yeah.
So how did you find your new you? What was that process?
Well, this is going to sound crazy. Well, it is quite crazy. One time I was playing a game of touch footy and a guy came at me and I learned how to – so I punched and I broke his nose, this guy's nose, which was terrible. And I felt so bad. It was just an unlucky punch. Mm. But the next day I went vegetarian. I thought, I've got to change. And I went vegetarian and I stayed like that for 5 years and I got a lot of the aggression out. I don't know how and somehow or other I was, as an accident, driving my sister to do an early childhood mature age test to become an early childhood teacher. And I dropped her off and I went, she said, "Why don't you try it?" And I went, "Okay, all right." Because I failed the HSC and all that, but I did have a brain. And so I did the mature age test and I got in and she got in, but she didn't want to do it. But I went there and I went from the world of men to the world of – there was three guys and 180 women.
Yeah.
So it was a great getting another perspective and it really flipped. And I didn't feel – I lost a lot of my aggression, which was good, and it hasn't come back.
Yeah.
But
– that's a great story. You know, there are – I've got friends and I've seen examples a lot of times of guys and girls, but mostly guys who will go off and – go to to do yoga and meditation, and they're just far removed from the people who they were, and they've really focused in on that inner anger and whatever it is for individuals. So I think there's really something in that, and going to a completely different sphere that you went to, that's got a great arresting quality about it. Did you enjoy it? Clearly you went on to
a path. I loved it. Yeah. I suppose at that time I forgot about the army because I thought the only thing I was focusing on was how aggressive I'd become. Yeah. So as the years went on, I realised there was more to the army and I loved it. It made me a lot of good things.
Yeah.
It's just I wasn't in control of myself when I first left. Yeah.
It's a learning process, I suppose, through. And interesting that you sort of just fell into, fell into the army, you fell into your next career move.
I had no plan. When I left the army, I didn't know what I was going to do. And a lot of guys just went straight into security.
Mm-hmm.
That's what everyone did.
Yep.
And But, I know this changes the subject a bit, but I'm still mates, still brothers with with all the guys that were in my, like the Sarge, the Corporal. Yeah. I went to dinner last night with a friend of mine, Mike McDaniel, Private McDaniel, who's a professor now in Indigenous Studies. And,
wow.
And he ran, he was the director of Ben Gara Dance. Like, and we looked at each other and said, what the hell?
Who would have thought?
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
What do they must say, sharing stories about your journey, because yours has been extraordinary in the sense that you went off, continued music in your life. That's been common
ongoing,
throughout. You've had a transformation, studied early childhood studies. You come out of that, that's kind of a transformative experience for you.
Absolutely.
And then at some period down the track, you find yourself on stage beyond the Cockroaches, who were at least nationally and to some extent internationally renowned band. Mm-hmm. You find yourself on stage in places like Rod Laver in the Wiggles form. That's the transformation in that must have been amazing.
I'm astounded by the numbers. Like, we did when DVDs were for sale, we'd sold 26 million DVDs, 8 million. The numbers, even yesterday, we found out that the Wiggles were the most streamed on Spotify Australian group, 284 million streams.
Incredible.
This year. So it's been incredible, you know. But saying that, I just get as much fun out of playing the local pub or, you know, playing the gigs we did at the War Memorial
How has that component of your life, that sort of rise to fame, how's that affected you, Anthony? I mean, you went from a very humble childhood, you know, you've done your path quietly, humbly, et cetera, and now, I mean, this fame, international fame.
You know, it's such a grounding job, because we're playing for children and their families. So you can't get a big head about that. You know, if you're rock and roll, it's kind of almost expected. But no, you can't get a big head about it. So, and I'm on the road so much that I think, you know, I don't really get to
the time to process
live on the yacht or anything.
But it has thrust you into the spotlight. I mean, your life has played out in the media, in the public eye, scrutiny, all those sorts of things. Yeah. I mean, I know, and I don't know if you want to touch on this, but some mental health battles in that journey as well.
No, I'm happy to talk about that. Absolutely. And the thing about the 90s was when I started the Wiggles, the guys were with me. I had no idea that I had depression. I had no idea what it even was. Mm-hmm. And the guys, God bless them, Murray, Jeff and Greg, they knew there was something wrong. You know, you do a gig and there's thousands, everyone's jumping up and down. We're in England and I'm in the dressing room with covering my head crying. Like, no one had an eye. No one knew. For a while, they nicknamed me Happy the Clown. Where's Happy?
Yeah.
But it was, you know. But it's been amazing. I think the last 2 years has been the most balanced I've been, and I don't know what it is. But I was only talking about, I'm sure a lot of listeners have, you know, been there, and I'd be suicidal in those days. Look for somewhere to do, you know, like, it's just dreadful. That was my always on my thought. Where can I go? Not for the last two or three, maybe even 3 years. And I've been just, I don't know if it's a medication or if it's, therapy or
insight as well. Have you, in an inner voice, have you come to terms with it? And is there an acceptance along the way?
Yeah, that might. I know that my doctor is a really good doctor. He just keeps saying to me, you're on this for the rest of your life.
Yep.
You know, you're on these. Because sometimes, you know, like everybody, I've taken myself off them.
Yeah.
And you
leave those decisions to the qualified. Yeah. But, you know, it's a really important story, and I'm really grateful for you sharing that. And in the veteran community, we do see higher rates of psychological disorders or mental health issues. And often they don't have or surround themselves, they'll isolate themselves and they don't have the friends around them to look after them or move to a point where they gain the insight themselves. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's one of the ongoing battles. So for you to be able to share that, mate, is really courageous.
Well, Harry, I've got PTSD, but it's from boarding school.
Yeah.
It's not from the army.
Yeah.
The army was the best.
Yeah.
So that's stayed with me forever.
Yeah.
And so I can relate to the soldiers who come back,
yeah,
and they've definitely got it. So,
and it goes to show the complexity of it. It's not always to do with service. There's other parts of life.
Absolutely, and, mate.
Things are very complex.
Yeah, and I do love Army. Boy, our uncle was Air Force and Navy the same. But but I do love the Army boys, how they write to you and go, oh, you haven't written for a while. What's wrong?
Yeah.
Because when I go down a bit, I just don't talk to anyone. You can send me 100 emails, I'll never reply.
Withdraw and
yeah.
It just kind of flows into my next question, which was, you know, for a period during the 90s and probably 2000s, the first decade over the 2000s, you didn't really engage greatly with the military or the past and you were, you know, rock and roller traveling the world. But yet recently, I remember a discussion we had a few years ago and you kind of had wandered back or fell back or kind of sought engagement in the veteran community. Is that true? You kind of come
that's,
this
that's
late?
That's true. Yeah. And I ran into a couple of guys I served with and they're just such good guys, man. They stayed in for a lot longer than me. But I realised what they've done and also I realised what a great time I had there. Mm-hmm. And I'm very proud of it. I felt
so proud of your service. I'm assuming that's how you landed up with your Royal Australian Regiment tattoo. Is that right? First.
That's right. Yeah. And I've got the bagpipe off for the Gordon. My sister, she passed away with cancer.
Oh.
But I love that. I love the Skippy badge. I love that there's Skippy and the cross rifles and the boomerang.
Yeah, yeah. The history in that from an Australian perspective is huge.
Fantastic. Yeah, it really is. Duty first. Boys still write to me at the end, I write duty first. I love it.
And it's any infantryman, which I'm one as well, will, when they see that badge, get a strike of honour.
Yeah, you know?
And in a lot of ways it's foundational. Everything else is built off that as far as I'm concerned. Yeah, you know?
How long after your service did you get the tat?
A long while.
Yeah.
It was just hanging out with the boys. They bought me a RAR ring, which I don't wear rings, but it was really nice. I said, you know, you're back, man. And I went, okay.
And so you have been in a way, you know, you come and helped us with the Rock for R&R. I know you've re-engaged with a whole lot of people, former mates, et cetera. And, you know, when I asked Anthony if he'd come on, it was, there wasn't really a question at all. It was yes, mate. It was just we got to organise it.
You are organised and I am not.
Yeah, but that's cool. As long as you go into the relationship understanding, that it was no problems at all.
Harry, you are the most organised person I've ever met.
Well, thank you. You'd be the only person to say that.
Yeah.
But we really wanted to have you on because one of the reflections that I know that you were happy to share was you've already shared is this re-engagement, you know, and sometimes veterans and families and partners as well will disengage with the military because they may not have had a great experience or life just gets in the way. You go off and become a mega rock star in the world, you know, by accident or by whether it's deliberate or design. But, you know, I guess my message is that's cool, that's all right.
Yeah.
But it'll always be here and actually when you come back, there's still a community and everyone will be going, where have you been? And welcoming back. And I think those stories are often and for those who might be isolated or have isolated themselves or struggling, they might go, I might just have a listen. Anthony Fields coming on and I didn't know he served. They probably are people who don't. And that's such a great positive message to leave that it doesn't leave you. It's always there and you're welcome back at any time.
Great, mate. Do you know, at least this year and last year we were playing the big arena in Sydney, big show arena, and Remembrance Day. No, it was, I don't know, we might have been Canberra. I can't remember where we were. Yeah. But both times we've stopped our show and Simon reads the ode and I play the bagpipe.
Observes, yeah, that's
and brilliant. There's thousands of people there.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just, I just feel like we've got to do that. And, yeah. And I know there's people there from all different communities and yep. cultures mm-hmm. and that.
Yeah.
But something's got to do, you know, like, yeah.
No,
yeah.
I agree. And I don't think there's a culture on earth that doesn't.
Remember.
Doesn't remember or doesn't pay some homage or respect to the veterans of war. I mean, it's, you know, war's unfortunately inevitable and still with us. We haven't become sophisticated enough yet as a species.
That's right.
So unfortunately, we'll continue to need to and the families as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And in hindsight for you, Anthony, I mean, obviously everything's tracked really well for you. You fell into, you know, you transitioned out, you fell into a new career path. For a lot of veterans, that transition process is fraught with difficulty. It's that sense of losing an identity, trying to recreate yourself.
That's true, yep.
Do you have any, with everything that you've lived through now, have you got any advice or anything in hindsight that maybe you would have done differently or you would advise veterans now to do? Is it the planning process? What, I mean, you fell into things. What, I mean, that doesn't happen for everybody.
I did fall into things, you're right, but I may not have, you know.
Yeah.
So, look, the best thing for me has been talking to people I've served with and just they're there for you. That's what Harry said. It's true that there's so many guys who just want to help you out I think just reach out to somebody who you liked and you can find everyone now with social media.
Yeah.
And just guys will help each other out, you know. Yeah.
And you said you're still connected to the RSL.
I'm a member of Gladesville RSL. I'm always there.
Right. Call me crazy, but am I right in saying there's a story about you, there's a photograph of you with some of your siblings and you've got your socks pulled up high and that was at the time when you were younger, that was how you got into the RSL, that was the dress code.
That's right. You had to wear you have a belt, shorts and your socks had to be up to your knees.
So that goes back to your childhood, your connection to an RSL. Did you used to go as a family, have a meal?
Blacktown RSL, always. And they used to have a Christmas party, which everyone couldn't wait for. All the families had come from all around the place. My family weren't service people. But everyone went to Blacktown
RSL. It was social.
It was great, mate. And then in the army, when I went in Singleton, they'd when you got a weekend, you'd catch the train to Sydney and go to the City of Sydney RSL.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember. The RSL was the place.
That's right. I remember that when I went to Sydney, there was I think it was like a sub branch or something just outside of King's Cross because that's, you know, that was the exciting. I was from the bush coming from Perth. But it was a place where you could go to, you know. And I know the RSL's working really hard, particularly here in Victoria. I'm really proud of the work that's being done by Aileen and others and Jess, who's a producer on the podcast. It'd be lovely to see them rise to that again and re-evolve and move into the future.
Well, it became a place for soldiers to go.
That's right, yeah. So I guess kind of heading towards the end now, mate, but what's next for Anthony Field? You know, you've got another tour and playing a packed-out stadium, is it tonight, at Rod Laver Arena?
Oh, tomorrow. Two shows. Yeah. I'd like to accept myself a lot more than I do at the moment, you know, still personally developing. So the career and all that, the music, I love it. But that's going pretty well. It's just still being honest with myself. That's still a hard thing for me, you know.
Yeah, Well, you should. Yeah. You should cut yourself some slack and relax and enjoy the great base you've made, of legacy you've left.
I love people, I've got to say. Yeah. I love meeting people and all that, you know.
And a whole generation. You know, that must be hugely satisfying.
It's really great. But today we went to the park here in Melbourne, and a fellow who's in a rock band that we know, his son has cancer. Mm. And so Lockie, myself, and Katarina turned up. We went to the park and played. And I'm not saying how, you know, that's really good of her, we love that we could actually
so much.
Help a little bit.
Yeah.
It makes us feel good, you know what I mean? Not So this poor little kid, but people are doing it tough out there, you know, with the kids. We've got to try our best.
And the joy you bring is priceless, I've got to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, mate, look, I look forward to staying in touch and reaching out occasionally to annoy you, but I can't say how grateful we are that you made the time
good on
today.
Harry. Absolutely. Thanks, thank guys.
You. And, mate, I look forward to the next time we can share a stage. I don't think I'll ever reach those, but just the Rock for R&R thing was excellent as well. But sharing a stage and a real thrill for me as a budding punk rocker Ailes to have Anthony.
Those guys hit hard.
You could be the next Wiggle.
I don't think so. No. They don't come in VB colours.
Anthony, thank you so much. Guys.
Thanks, mate.
Cheers. That was a wow moment for me, I've got to say, sitting down with someone that I grew up with, my kids have grown up with, watching live concerts on the TV and sitting down and having a one-on-one with Anthony Field and learning about his service history and how he has created his path and actually also getting a bit of an understanding about the lessons that he's learnt along the way.
Yeah, no, the thing that really stuck out for me was the impact that his service in the infantry corps has had on him over time. I'm always intrigued to people who kind of gravitate away or that move away from their military past or origins and then come back later in life, and that was a real moment for me.
It seems he is more proud now of his service history and his time in the army, and you know, we talked about representing Australia and that the importance of that to him. He's more proud of all of that now than he was even at the time when he was going through it.
Yeah, no, fantastic. And he's got a mad tattoo on his arm with Duty First on it for all the infantry people that listened. Just drawing so many lines from long necks in the front of the Holden. And his connections with Tibby Cotter, cricket, etc. There's just so much to this guy and what a life, and just really rapt to have him on and telling his story as a veteran on Beyond the Barracks. It was bloody terrific.
Humble beginnings and a rise to fame. Yeah. Pretty awesome. If this podcast episode raises any concerns for you, please contact Lifeline on 13 11 14. If you're a current or ex-service member of the ADF or a family member of a veteran or someone who's currently serving, you can access free and confidential 24/7 support from Open Arms Veterans and Families Counselling on 1800 011 046. Current serving members of the ADF and their families can also contact the All Hours support line on 1800 628 036 for confidential support. RSL Victoria is here to provide assistance and support to past and present service personnel and their families. Importantly, you don't have to be a member of the RSL to receive assistance from RSL Victoria. You only have to be a current or former member of the Australian Defence Force, our allies, or a dependent of either group. To access RSL support, you can reach out to your closest RSL sub-branch or contact RSL Victoria's Veteran Central Service on 1300 MILVET, 1300 645 838.